acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 145, An Old Friend. Sunday, November 27th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Each episode, I put show notes, links to things I talk about, and photographs on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode includes the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, and I will conclude with a little update about the Taproot make-along that will begin on January 1. The back porch. It has been a very productive week at Yin Hu in terms of completing projects. That has been motivated by two things. One, my intense interest in getting projects done by the end of November so that I can spend December doing some different kind of gift knitting. And two, I have really curbed my screen time and decided to go on a digital detox this week, meaning that I wasn't active on social media. I wasn't passive on social media either, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in just a moment. And I really cut my screen time except for what I needed to do for work, and I did need to consult a few recipes as I was cooking Thanksgiving dinner. But I got a lot done, and so what this week has taught me is that though I really enjoy my interaction with others on social media, I need to be mindful that when I spend time looking at a screen, I am really engaged in interaction. Because I think a lot of the time what I'm doing is I'm just looking at posts of others and just passively taking in a lot of information and beautiful photographs. And I could be spending that time actively engaged on my own projects. So I think I will try now when I'm using the computer or using my phone for social media, that if I'm spending that time, I'm going to be actively involved. I'm not just going to be a passive consumer of words and photographs. We'll see how that works, but on to the projects. I had a goal this week of completing three different projects, and I managed to accomplish that. The first project I completed was a collection of cork shrooms. This is a very small mushroom ornament that is knit at the top. There's some cable detail and some ribbing to create the texture and shape of a mushroom. And this mushroom cap, the knitted mushroom cap, is fit over a wine cork, and it creates a little cork shroom. I figured out how to attach a little screw-in eyelet hook. This is a closed loop hook so that I could attach a piece of yarn and secure it and secure the mushroom cap on the top of the cork so it wouldn't pop off, and then this could be a hanging ornament on the tree. The recipient could also just snip the yarn loop off and set this on a shelf instead, but I wanted it to be very clear that this was meant to be a hanging ornament. I knit these up for family and friends as I have a tradition. I'm not sure how many years it is now, maybe 6 or 7 years, that I have either crocheted or knit a very small ornament and sent it to some special friends and family in lieu of a Christmas card or holiday card. I really like this practice. I like to find something new each year to create. And recently I've been using a lot of hand spun in my projects because I do meditative spindling all year long. And I'm kind of scattered in my approach to selecting fibers and colors for this spindling. So I'm not really working on one big project. And what happens is I end up with a lot of random little skeins of yarn, and they're perfect for creating these little ornaments and little gifts. So I use my hand spun for this project, and I used my US size 1 signature needles and a pattern by Julie Tarsha. It's available as a free pattern download on Ravelry. And I really enjoyed knitting these up. Working in the round with very fine yarn and US size 1 needles can be fiddly. So by about mushroom 3 or 4, I started working the first few rows back and forth on one needle and then joining in the round. And later on, I just seamed up that gap as I completed the little mushroom. That sped up my progress considerably because I think the most time-consuming thing when working in the round on DPNs and very fine yarn is that fiddly beginning. And my needles wanted to slide out of the project. It was a little frustrating, but once I developed this technique of just putting those first few rounds as rows on one needle, the project sped along quickly, and I would say I spent about 45 minutes on each of these corkshrooms. The next completed project is the Tungata. It is a double thick knit cowl designed by Stephen West. This cowl incorporates corrugated rib, some stranded knitting, and just knitting stripes in the round. And it's made for 3 different colors. This will be a gift for Samuel, whether it will be a birthday gift, because he has a birthday coming up in early December, or a Christmas gift. I have not decided yet, but I am very pleased that this pattern is complete. And I think it will make a very handsome cowl. I won't be putting photographs in any very public place, but I will put some in my project page on Ravelry so you can see if you're interested. I used a merino cashmere nylon blend yarn that was dyed locally by Apple Tree. And the 3 colors are a very frosty light gray, a black, and a spicy brown. The brown is a little bit dark. In my opinion, I think I should have chosen a golden color, or maybe something red would have popped a little bit more. But Samuel prefers muted colors and darker colors, so I think he will like this very much. I eliminated a few of the repeats of stranded knitting and made this cowl a bit narrower than is called for in the pattern. I started to think about it being doubled up around the neck, and if it were too wide, I just felt like it would be uncomfortable. So I did 3 repeats of the stranded knitting pattern and all of the corrugated rib that was called for, and I think that's really perfect. It seemed to me in looking at projects on Ravelry for this pattern that a lot of people were just kind of going off on their own for the stripes on the other side. And so that's what I did. I alternated colors every round, except for a few places where I made a little bit thicker stripes. And I used the light gray and the brown on the back of this. When the cowl is twisted around the neck two times, you get to see both the striping and the corrugated rib and color work. So it makes it look just very rich and dimensional and textured. It creates a really lush look, which I think is perfect inside of a coat. The third project I completed is the owl hat. This is a crocheted hat pattern by Deborah Dandenau, and it's available free on Ravelry. This hat is for my sister Laura, for whom I made another hat of this description. And in crocheting the hat, I did have some moments of recollection because some of the stitch pattern and stitch definition did cause me to remember that I had crocheted this before. I gave this hat to her several years ago. I didn't even know that it was a favorite. And she told me that she had lost it and she really wanted another one. So I went back to this old friend, crochet. I began my journey in the fiber arts with crochet. I took a course at my workplace called Crochet for Stress Relief, and there was just no turning back. I crocheted very passionately for several years, and then I decided that I wanted to learn to knit and taught myself largely with video tutorials, although since, you know, I've taken classes for different techniques and I've learned from others, but that first knitting project was really the result of tutorials that I found online. And then I started thinking about whether there might be any knitting podcasts, since I have been an avid podcast listener for a very long time. Were there any knitting podcasts? And that's when I sort of fell into this world of knitting podcasts and decided to create my own. Going back to crochet this week was really just a trip down memory lane. Since I've begun knitting so much, I haven't really made a place for crochet. I have done some projects here and there, and certainly having crochet skills is very handy for a knitter. I'm also a continental knitter, thanks to the fact that I began with crochet and was accustomed to holding yarn in my left hand, and I think that has made a very big impact on my ability to knit and the ease with which I knit, because I think continental as a style is much more comfortable for me. And it was really a lot of fun working on this project. I remembered how much yarn crochet uses, which is really fantastic when you're trying to use up yarn from your stash. And for this crochet hat pattern, I used some Misty Alpaca. It's a 70% merino, 30% alpaca that I used for a sweater project a while back. And I used two skeins, or I think just over 200 yards. I used almost all of two skeins of this yarn for the project. And in fact, I needed to alter the way I was doing stitches because as I'm a loose knitter, I also have very loose stitches in crochet, I found out. I had never really considered that before. I was using up way too much yarn at the beginning of the project, and so I shortened the height of my stitches after doing the initial increases for the hat. So wherever it said double crochet, I did a half double crochet, and where it said treble crochet, I did a double. This hat pattern is really cool because you create six owls around the circumference of the hat, and you do it with crochet cables. This means you use some technique called front post crochet, which means that instead of just going through the exposed loop at the top of your work, you reach down with your hook and you go around the entire stitch. And that creates this really dimensional look. And then if you elongate your stitches, you can also play with those dimensional stitches and pull them in one direction or another and cross them, just like you would cables in knitting. So it is some really advanced techniques in crochet, I think. A little bit easier because you're working with worsted weight yarn and a reasonably sized hook. I think it calls for HI or J, depending on the size you need to get the hat size you'd like. I find that working with very fine yarns in crochet ups the level of difficulty considerably. So working with a sport weight, DK, or worsted weight in itself makes a project a little bit easier. But this had quite a few different kinds of stitches and stitch patterns to create that texture. And I think it made it an intermediate sort of pattern. So you get these dimensional owls. It's really neat because it looks like they're perched on a branch. And then you can sew buttons on the eyes. But I don't remember my sister saying anything about there being buttons on her hat. So I didn't sew any on, and I know she could do that later if she would like. The original hat was knit in Noro yarn. And I'm a little bit concerned that that Noro yarn may have been part of its appeal. But the Noro yarn I had was really, really chunky, and I didn't have enough for a hat. And I wanted to complete it without making any purchases because I wasn't really doing any shopping this week. So I went to my stash and used what's on hand, and the hat is a beautiful deep red color. This hat crocheted up very, very quickly, and as I was working on it, I was just thinking about what an old friend crochet is to me. And I was wondering if you have an old friend in the fiber arts. Is there something that got you started, a certain technique or craft that got you started on your work in fiber arts? Is there something that you used to do but you've kind of abandoned for no good reason, really? And maybe it's time for a bit of a return or a revival. I'd love to hear your thoughts if you have any comments about your old friend in the fiber arts. Maybe it's even a material, a certain fiber, a certain yarn, a particular tool that's like your good old standby friend in the fiber arts. I'd really like to hear about that on the chatter for the episode this week. The front porch. On the front porch is December gift knitting. And this is a different kind of gift knitting because for the past few years, it's been my practice to try and finish up all gift knitting for recipients by the end of November and then spend December working on crafting with some yarn or patterns or even tools that have been given to me as gifts. And this is kind of a treat for myself during the month of December. First up is just a pattern that I discovered recently and I have been wanting to cast on. I will be winding the yarn for this project today. It's the Feminist Killjoy hat. It's designed by Glitz Knits Boutique and is a purchase pattern available on Ravelry. And I would like to make this hat a soulful stash project. So I have gone through my stash and I have found some Beaver Slide dry goods yarn in a natural heathered gray and a very bright pink. It's not a neon pink because Beaver Slide tends toward the more natural in their colors, but it is quite a vibrant pink color. This yarn is a bit thicker than worsted weight. It's a really beefy, dense yarn. Wonderful for a hat because it's nice and warm. And so I may need to play around a little bit with stitch count and needle size in order to create a hat that isn't too big. But I look forward to it. I think because of the weight of the yarn, this will knit up very quickly. The hat says Feminist Killjoy in Stranded Knitting. And there's also a series of the Venus or copper symbol around the border of the hat. And I think it would also look great with a big old pom-pom on the top. So that's number one. Some other projects, I probably won't have time for them all, but I've been just kind of daydreaming about them over the past few weeks. One is a crocheted rug, a very small crocheted rug that I would like to make for the bottom of the stairs in my house. I was given, oh, I don't know what size, maybe a size U or W crochet hook by my friend Lara. And I have intended to make use of this hook to knit a rug. I have some hand-spun yarn from Vermont. It's really thick and thin and dense, and I think this would be a really perfect rug. I'm not sure that I have enough yarn, and I think that's what is stopping me from working on this project. And just crocheting that hat for my sister, I realized how much yarn crochet projects eat up, and I'm not really sure at all about how much I have, because this hand-spun yarn doesn't have any yardage on it. So I guess I've just been reluctant to start, thinking, oh, what if I invest time in this project and then I don't have enough yarn to complete it? But I really shouldn't worry about that. I should just give it a try. And if it doesn't work as a rug, it could just be a mat for a table or an insert for a basket or something like that, where I want to put something nice and thick and sturdy at the bottom. And these are in no particular order, but I would like to continue work on the Collie Wobbles socks that I have begun. This pattern was a gift from the designer, Emily, of the Fibertown podcast. I started these socks in earnest, but since I have been working on Samuel's cowl project, that has been in my bag so I could work on it without him seeing. And I took the sock project out. And you know what's really this weird thing is that you don't make any progress on projects unless you actually have them with you to work on. So I want to put that sock project back in my bag and make some more progress on that. I am working on these socks in tandem on two different sets of DPN needles. I'm enjoying the knitting of them very much. I have completed the cuff on each sock, and I am now working on the heel flaps. So I have one heel flap done, and the other one is just begun. So I'm eager to return to that gift knitting. I was given the pomegranate sweater pattern by Joanna Spring. This is a beautiful, I wouldn't say it's cropped, but it's not a long sweater. It's a kind of a shortish pullover, and I think this would be a great addition to the wardrobe because it would be really nice over a skirt with a bit of a higher waist or over a dress. It's a pullover pattern with this gorgeous pomegranate lace insert on the front and on the back. And I have yarn for this project, but I want to dye it. I bought it on really deep discount, and I don't even remember the brand, but it is a superwash yarn, and I'm trying to knit up that yarn in my stash because I don't really want to have that kind of yarn stashed anymore. And I thought that I could turn this superwash yarn into a more soulful project by dyeing it myself. The yarn is just a very plain gray sort of color. Upon looking in my stash this week, I noticed that the gray was a little bit darker than I had recollected. So I think it will take over dyeing pretty well. And I think being a superwash, the yarn will take the dye quite readily. My intention is to dye a combination of walnut and indigo. And I'd like to get a walnut dye pot going sometime during the month of December. And maybe I will save the indigo dyeing for the springtime. I'm not sure. But I'd like to get a start on this project by at least dyeing up the yarn. And I have some other things I want to put into an a walnut dye pot as well. I'm still not sure whether my Sheep to Shawl project will be one of them. A few of you have written to me that you are reluctant about my intention to dip that whole project into a walnut dye bath. My intention in doing that is to mute the colors overall and give a consistent tone to the entire project. I'm still on the fence about whether or not I want to do that, and my intention had been to knit some cuffs or mitts or hand warmers with the same yarn, some leftover yarn from my projects, and throw them in the dye pot to see what the results would be before I plunk in this poncho that took me 2 years to create. But I haven't made anything in terms of a mitt or a cuff. I started something, but I'm not sure if I like it. I may rip it out. So I'm really not any closer to making that decision. A fifth and I think final project idea I have for the month of December is the Lonely Tree shawl. I have loved the shawl. I've looked at it so many times on Ravelry, and my friend Fernanda gave me this pattern as a gift. I have some absolutely beautiful yarn from the Woolly Thistle to knit this project, and I think that that's probably my second idea for a cast on during the month of December. I have some Cornish tin too, two beautiful skeins of the DK weight, and I think this would make a really nice, beautiful shawl. It's a, I forget the colorway name at the moment, but it's like a very muted brownish gray. I think it would go with everything. And I think that this shawl would really be a well-loved, much-used accessory. So that could be another cast-on coming up during the month of December. Ever-expanding skill set. This month, I have been cooking with our hashtag Power Pantry ingredient of squash. And I haven't done as many recipes as I really wanted, but yesterday I did make the pumpkin bread recipe from the Joy of Cooking cookbook. Pumpkin bread is one of my favorites. I remember my mom making pumpkin bread quite often, all throughout the winter months. And so I have excellent warm and cozy associations with pumpkin bread. A few years ago, I made a really great purchase of two small loaf pans. And these loaf pans are made of metal. They have a nonstick kind of a coating on the inside. They're pretty high quality. And all around the outside, they have a big lip of at least an inch, maybe more, all the way around, which makes them really easy to grab. One of the problems I have with small loaf pans in the oven is that it's difficult to retrieve them when you have your oven mitts on. And these are really easy to handle. They bake very nicely. And what they enable me to do is make one quick bread type of recipe, pour it in two loaf pans, keep one loaf out and around to snack on, or to use for breakfast or something like that, and then wrap the other one and put it in the freezer. And so this has been my practice with quick breads for quite a while, because one large quick bread is a lot for two people. They're usually, you know, they have fat and sugar and quite a few calories, so I try to curb my intake, but if there's this giant loaf there, it just seems like you just cut off slice after slice after slice. Whereas with a smaller loaf, I think we eat it a little more carefully. So that was a good November recipe. I also incorporated squash into my Thanksgiving meal. I made some roasted acorn squash and Brussels sprouts with a lime and cilantro aioli to go over it. And that was a great vegetable addition to the meal. Nice and healthy, and the Brussels sprouts got really nice and crispy. So I will be using some of the leftovers of that turkey stuffing, gravy, and smashed potatoes. I did smashed potatoes this year. I kind of went the easy route. I usually bake my potatoes in the oven and then use a ricer. And in my opinion, this is the fail-proof, absolute best recipe for making fluffy and wonderful mashed potatoes that don't get gluey. But this year, I tried to simplify my Thanksgiving menu. Samuel and I went to a concert the night before, which meant that I didn't have a lot of prep time. And I also had a super busy week at work. So I bought Yukon Gold potatoes and I boiled them, which I almost never do. And then I just smashed them up with some half and half butter and gorgonzola cheese. They were good. So the way I will use my leftovers is to make a version of a shepherd's pie. I have a small, very small casserole dish. It's about, I guess, 4-serving casserole dish. I put turkey and mashed potatoes on the bottom, and then I layer over some vegetables. I cut them into smaller pieces so that they resemble peas and carrots in a traditional kind of shepherd's pie. And then I add gravy and over the top mashed potatoes. I dot that with some butter and sprinkle with panko breadcrumbs. Yum, delicious. Our Thanksgiving menu also included an outstanding pumpkin cheesecake. Samuel made this cheesecake. It's been a very long time since I have not served pies at my Thanksgiving table, but I was excited about this pumpkin cheesecake. He's made it a couple times before. It's kind of a painstaking recipe, but super delicious and beautiful presentation. I wish I had taken a photo, but because I was on digital detox, I had my phone really put away, and I didn't think very much about photographing too many aspects of the meal. So we had this pumpkin cheesecake. It was baked the night before. We stored it in the trunk of the car overnight, and then on Thanksgiving Day, I transferred it to my beautiful glass cake stand. It's a glass dish on a pedestal and then a beautiful glass top with a really striking design for the knob or the handle on the dish, the glass dish cover. We had this sitting right outside of our window of our dining room on a table that we use during the summertime. And we need to do this because I have a super small European style refrigerator. And during the holidays, I need to utilize outside cold storage as a kind of addendum to my refrigerator space because it's being used for a whole bunch of other stuff. And it was cold on Thanksgiving, so ideal for storing things outside. And I thought, you know, with that sitting right outside the window, we can keep an eye on it. So we had finished dinner and we're kind of sitting around. Some people were at the table. I had moved over to sit in more of the living room portion of our downstairs. And Samuel started to swear and scream and holler. He got up from the table. He rushed outside. And as he was doing this, I was able to look through the window and see that a raccoon had climbed up on the table and had lifted the cake dish lid off of the cake stand. As he heard and saw Samuel, he dropped it, turned around, and started to flee off of the porch. And I think none of our guests saw this raccoon. I was the only other person to see it. But Samuel heard something directly behind him and he turned and saw, you know, this whole approach of the raccoon. And that's when he started screaming. So to everyone else, all of our other guests, it just looked like Samuel had this unbelievable swearing, screaming fit. And the raccoon just not very much in a rush, just kind of like wandered over, sat on a tree stump outside, and kind of looked at us. And by this time, I had also gotten up and gone outside, and he just was kind of looking at us with his evil eye. What an excellent save. There, first of all, the cake was fine. He didn't get a chance to touch it at all. And I think his very next move would have been to stick a paw or just bite right into that cheesecake. My glass cake dish survived intact because the other threat would be glass shards in the cheesecake. We wouldn't be able to eat it. Oh my goodness, what a stressful 60 seconds that was. And since there was no pie, there would have been no backup plan and no dessert on Thanksgiving without that amazing save. So the moral of the story is nothing is safe on that porch unless it's absolutely nailed down and animal proof. Definitely the cheesecake was not giving off any scent inside that glass dish, but we roast our Thanksgiving turkey on the grill. And I think the attraction of animals to the porch was just this amazing smell of roast turkey all around the house. And then I think the raccoon was probably drawn to that. And then the beautiful glass knob at the top of my cake dish may also have been an attraction, because I know raccoons like to run off with shiny kinds of little objects. So it may have been that he was just trying to snatch that ornamental knob from the top of the cake dish. I don't know, but we had some Thanksgiving excitement this year. The hashtag Power Pantry ingredient for the month of December is onions. So I look forward to your recipes, ideas, and posts, and to cooking along with you with onions during this month coming up. And finally, just a few words about the make-along that's coming up in January. I have been receiving Taproot magazine for 1 year. It is the only publication that comes to my home. It's the only monthly subscription. And I really admire Taproot because I think it provides articles and ideas that fuel me. And I respect and admire their decision to go without advertising. It has been a goal of mine for many years to remove advertising from my life as much as possible, or to remove myself from situations where the primary objective is to be a target for advertising. And so Taproot really fits in with that model, and I have enjoyed receiving it over the course of the year. This was a Christmas gift. I spent at least 1 year without receiving any periodicals at all while I thought very carefully about subscriptions and what I wanted to be coming into my home. And so I've talked quite a bit about different articles and features of Taproot over the course of this year, and I thought having a make-along would be a great idea for the new year. Taproot has three sections: head, hands, and heart. And in the hands section of Taproot are all kinds of things you can make. There is often a knitting or crochet pattern. Sometimes there's sewing. There are recipes. There are all different kinds of crafts and projects. And recently, some of the issues of Taproot have also come with coloring pages in them. So anything from the hands section of Taproot magazine, any issue is eligible for this make-along. And you don't have to complete the project. You can just participate and work along at your own pace. The reason why I've mentioned this already and why I'm mentioning it again today is that to participate in a make-along, sometimes you have to secure materials, or you may have been considering a subscription to Taproot Magazine. So this gives you a little bit of time to gather what you need in order to participate. Over the course of this week, I have also received some Ravelry messages with offers of prizes for this make-along, and I am thrilled about that. So thank you so much to Amy and Katrina, and let me tell you about these prizes. Amy, who's known as the Jasper Patch on Ravelry, has offered a pattern prize of up to $8 for a participant in the make-along. And Katrina, who is Bliss Cat on Ravelry, has offered up a subscription, a year subscription to Taproot Magazine. Some people are able to pick up a copy on the newsstand, and sometimes people are de-stashing old issues of Taproot. So you could acquire one of these issues in a variety of different ways. But if you win this gift, this could be a subscription for you. Or if you've already been enjoying Taproot, this could be a gift subscription for someone who you think would really like to receive it. So thank you so much, Amy and Katrina. I really appreciate that offer of prizes. I will be going through my stash and throwing in at least one prize of my own. And if you would like to participate, you can send me a message on Ravelry and let me know. These prizes will be participation prizes, so all you need to do is post in the thread, maybe show us what you'd like to work on, and once this make-along starts, what you are working on. The prizes will be drawn in March. This make-along will conclude on March 1. And of course, projects in process, things that you've already begun, are certainly eligible. It would be really nice to see all of the different ways that folks are utilizing that hand section of Taproot and to kind of create a community around that for a few months at the beginning of the year. I will be knitting the journal cowl. This is a design in issue 18 of Taproot. It's a beautiful stranded cowl knit in the round and has a variety of stranded knitting motifs as well as the invitation to create your own. And I believe the stitch count for the cowl is 96 stitches, which the pattern author said is just really great for stitch motifs of various counts. And so I think I will try my hand at coming up with some motifs, but I'll also be knitting some of the beautiful ones that she includes in her pattern. And I will be drawing my inspiration from a collection of Icelandic folk tales. One of the suggestions for knitting this pattern is to go back to a journal of your own, or to knit the cowl as kind of a journal of a trip you've taken or a time in your life, that kind of thing. But I thought it would be kind of interesting to explore something new with this cowl. And so I wrote to Meadow of the Woven Road podcast. She's living in Iceland now. She's doing an advanced degree in archaeology. She's an archaeologist, and she is particularly interested in textile archaeology. Her podcast, The Woven Road, is really fascinating, and she was incredibly generous by writing back to me with many different suggestions of collections of Icelandic folktales. So I've selected one by Jacqueline Simpson. I got a hardcover book, kind of a hand-me-down book on Amazon, and I already have it in my possession, and I'm starting to read the introduction. This is a kind of, it's kind of like a linguistic and literary exploration of Icelandic folktales. So you get the tale, but you also get a lot of background information about it. And there's a lot of comparison between Icelandic tales, other kinds of like Nordic or Scandinavian tales, and also European folk tales. The author, Jacqueline Simpson, is interested in tracing the heritage and the spread of different types of ideas in folklore. So I think I'm really going to enjoy that. And I'll enjoy taking some of the themes from the reading I'm doing and translating them into visual stitch patterns on this cowl. I hope you will join me and other Yarns at Yinhu listeners in the Taproot Make-Along. Again, that begins January 1. There's already a thread open on the group in Ravelry, and it's a place for planning as well as in progress and completed objects. So just one thread for everything and some fabulous prizes.
Acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine, mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, mighty fine nature thing. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a sweet nature, sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. Chipmunk on the lawn, six turkeys up in munching like fat hogs. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is So Wheat. Song and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Bovine Social Club. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week. Thank you.
deserve is gonna get you high. You better tell your face to smile. Jump in a river naked and hike a country mile and say, sweet nature, sweet nature, babe. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a